Welcome to Lost in the Supermarket. It was about a month or so ago in my Forbes column that I really wanted to set the stage on one of the things that I think is the most important aspects that agriculture really needs to focus on, and that's indoor farming, specifically vertical farming. I actually went out to Bowery Farming in New Jersey, went to their R&D facility, met with the people there, tasted a lot of great new produce items, and then followed up with the co-founder and CEO, Irving Fain, who's with us today to talk even more about why indoor farming and vertical farming is so important. And just in the New York Times last week, there was a story about how in Provence, France, winemakers are having to grapple with climate change and change how they approach the growing of century-old varieties. The taste, and I'm quoting from the Times, the taste of century-old varieties are being altered by spiking temperatures, scant rainfall, snap frost, and unpredictable bouts of extreme weather. Temperature records were set in Europe, the U.S., China, North Africa, and the Middle East as hail, drought, wildfires, and floods on a biblical scale inflicted damage. So when we look at agriculture, we have some severe issues to really address and address very quickly. Irving, welcome to Lost in the Supermarket.
Thanks so much for having me, Phil. I wish all of those statistics you just rattled off weren't so recent for all of us, but I'm glad to be here to talk about all of it.
So what I want to do, again, I refer to the Forbes column. That was the beginning stage. Now what I want to do is get more in depth with you and really be able to get into, you know, your insights and your brain on just how important these issues are. So I guess to start, you know, how short-term climate impacts, such as the overuse of groundwater, which is draining and damaging our planet, wildfires, these extreme heat that I talked about, have heightened the business case for vertical farming?
You know, it's interesting that there isn't more conversation about the water as a resource as it relates to agriculture and where we're headed and the challenges that we're being faced with right now, given how crucial access to that water in this country alone really is to the whole ecosystem. And you know, we have a vast system of aquifers in the U.S. underneath the ground that actually has arguably helped us to create this vibrant agricultural ecosystem and powerhouse that we've become. We export an enormous amount of crops, not just fresh produce, but actually enormous amounts of grains and row crops. And much of that is the benefit or from the benefit of this aquifer system that we have, California, the Midwest. I mean, these aquifers have been giving us water for decades and decades and decades. The problem is they are being depleted at enormously rapid rates. And the depletion is happening much, much faster than replenishment can ever happen. And so you are finding communities, whether it be in the Midwest, whether it be in the West, whether it be in the Southwest, where water that used to be accessible at certain depths is no longer there. And we have to go deeper and deeper and deeper just to find some amount of water that we can use. And that problem that we're facing today is actually only going to get worse. And you just talked about it's being exacerbated by what's happening above ground, which is hotter temperatures, general warming. That means faster evaporation. That means less water that actually hangs around and seeps into the ground. And contrary to what sometimes people think, these deluges of rain, like what we saw this winter, this atmospheric rivers, or rather the spring and summer, these atmospheric rivers, it actually doesn't help. It hurts us. And the reason it hurts us is because when that much water falls that quickly, it doesn't have time to actually seep in and replenish our groundwater table. It just rushes out to the oceans and very little of it actually gets captured. And so there's this reinforcement cycle that happens when it gets as warm as it does outside, where water evaporates more quickly, we have bigger rains, that water washes away, and the entire cycle that for decades and decades and decades, you know, earlier in the 20th century, we relied on to become such a rich agricultural nation, that is waning. It's changing. It's evolving. And you pointed out the challenges we have in the U.S. are just one aspect of challenges that we see around the entire world. And the best way to describe it is just a much larger volatility in climactic events than we've ever seen before. We've always seen changes in the climate, but the delta and the distinction between what you see in the winter, what you see in the summer, the amount of rain you get, the amount of heat you get, that has spiked to a whole new level. And the agricultural ecosystem that we've come to rely on hasn't been built to manage and handle that level of volatility in the way that we're experiencing it today. And so we have to adjust.
So if we take a look at everything that you just said, it's a pretty dismal picture for traditional farming because we're not able to control the climate the way, you know, we'd like to be able to. We're seeing reports that, you know, we're going to see heavier rains, we're going to see hotter weather. So to your point, it's just going to get worse. So how do we really look at the future for vertical farming, for CEA, in a much more balanced way where we can work together with traditional farmers? And one of the notes that I made in my, you know, article in Forbes was how vertical farming, because it is more technical in its operation, is really attracting younger people to farming. So, you know, we're going to have more new farmers who are smarter that are vertical farmers or CEA. And, you know, how are we going to deal with this? With you running, you know, Bowery, you know, you've got to be looking at it and saying, you know, I got to build Bowery to be 10 or 20 times the size of what you are now. And now you're big, you're selling, you know, thousands of supermarkets around the country, but you've got to grow even faster to solve this issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. The imperative for what we're doing, Phil, has never been clearer. And yet, there's a sense in today's world where there's a sense of immediacy in our needs. And we live in a world of instant gratification, right? You look at TikTok and Instagram and social media and our phones in our hands all the time. And so that translates in some ways to expectations we have for bigger innovations and societal trends. And understandably, we find exciting new opportunities and innovations and we want them to blossom and be there tomorrow. And don't get me wrong, I would love to be 20 times larger tomorrow as well. But you know, there is real truth in the long road to overnight success. And, you know, we're excited at Bowery. We're the largest indoor vertical farming company out there. You know, we're in over 2,600 retail stores today. That's a great footprint, but we still have so much further to grow and so much further to go. And even when you look at the entire industry, we're still a smaller portion of a much larger opportunity, which today is really driven by field-grown agriculture. And what you're seeing is a lot more pressure that's going to be applied on field-grown agriculture from many, many different angles. I mean, we've talked about climate. The climate challenge is very real. Most of our fresh produce comes from either the Salinas Valley in California or it comes from the Yuma, Arizona, and the southwestern region. That's what we grow in this country. And again, we were talking about the aquifers. You know, since 2003 in the Central Valley, losses total about 36 million acre feet of water. That is 1.3 times the full water storing capacity of Lake Mead near Las Vegas, which is the largest reservoir we have in the country. So we have lost a lot of water there, and that's going to continue. But it's not just a story of water. We talk about drought. We've had the 1,200-year drought that's ravaged the West, the Southeast, even the Midwest. Then you have labor challenges, where labor is becoming harder to find, labor is becoming more expensive. All of these components are impacting the outdoor agricultural ecosystem. There has to be a response. That said, our supply chain has been built over decades and decades, 100 plus years. And so we are going to see a world where vertical farming is going to become a larger and larger portion of the grocery store, and it's going to become a larger and larger portion of the crops that you find in the produce aisle, but that won't happen overnight. Will it happen more rapidly and more quickly? Absolutely. The adoption curve is going to increase, but changes that are systemic like this still take time, no matter how strong the tailwinds are and how strong the desire is.
So we've talked about outdoor agriculture. We've talked about farmers. Let's move to consumers. You know, what's the benefit to consumers for vertical farming? What are they going to realize? Is it just going to be, you know, more of the same? Is it going to be higher prices? What benefits do consumers really get from this?
What's great about what we do at Bowery and vertical, or the vertical farming at Bowery, is there are both benefits to consumers and there are very real benefits to retailers. So let's talk about retailers first.
Okay.
You see the highest shrink in the retail store in fresh produce.
Of course.
Now, it's a perishable product. It goes bad. And one of the real challenges retailers have and have had for as long as time, essentially, and you know this very well, is how do I buy enough produce to make sure the people have it, but not enough that it spoils and goes bad? That's both an economic problem for retailers, and it's a food waste. It's an environmental and sustainability problem as well. Food waste is a very real thing in the grocery store, let alone in our shelves or in our refrigerators at home. And when we deliver a product at Bowery, we deliver that with 20 plus days of shelf life. You know, we deliver our product 24 hours to 48 hours after it's been harvested, it reaches our retailers, compared to weeks of time or months of time in the existing supply chain. So the product shows up, it's more nutritious because it loses less nutrients in that time, it's higher quality, it tastes better, and it lasts longer. That's good for the retailer across the board. Now you talk about a consumer. The consumer takes those same benefits, right? You bring home, we've all had that experience where you take home some produce and it feels like a day later, it's bad. And you're throwing it away, or you're trying to eat it, and you're picking around the bad parts of the produce. So having a consumer experience where what you're buying is staying fresh in your refrigerator for a week, 2 weeks, hopefully you've eaten it by then, but if you haven't, it's still fresh. That's great. Having produce that's more nutritious, that tastes better, that's really valuable. And then there's the component of it where consumers are asking questions now. Where's my food coming from? Where is it grown? What's on it? What's in it? People don't like pesticides. I mean, you read about the Dirty Dozen every single year. There's a reason that gets published. People don't want chemicals and pesticides on their food and on their produce. That's what's interesting. Organic is a great step forward in the way that we grow food, but organic still uses pesticides, and consumers oftentimes don't know that. So to provide people with a completely pesticide-free product with total transparency, you know exactly where it came from, you can trace it back to exactly where it was grown, how it was grown. We're very straightforward about that because answering those questions for consumers is important. And then it's more nutritious, it lasts longer, it tastes better. That's a lot of benefits for consumers. And we're selling our product at or below the cost of field-grown branded organic product. And so it's a good consumer proposition and an importantly valuable retail proposition as well.
So we see behind you these racks of produce items, you know, growing. Let's talk a little bit about the technical aspect of vertical farming. It's not just having racks with dirt and plants in there. Really talk about the technology that's involved. Talk about how it works.
And I want to, you asked something before that I didn't really cover, and I want to use this, it's a good opportunity. Farmers are actually quite technical, as you know, field-based farmers. And in fact, farming is a technology-focused craft and has been for quite some time. It always bothered me when people said, oh, there's been no innovation in farming. And I always kind of say, that's not true at all. In fact, there's been enormous amounts of innovations in farming. It's just different types of innovation. And so there's a deep technical focus in the way we grow and harvest and manage our land today. What we're doing at Bowery is we're bringing different technologies in a different approach. And so you have a set of farmers already who are becoming a lot more conversant with technology already. And what we're doing is bringing a different type of technology, a different manner of growing. And to the point you made earlier, it certainly attracts either a different type of farmer, or at least it opens the door to individuals and younger people who may not have ever considered farming because they don't live near farmland or they don't come from a farming family. But what we do at Bowery offers them an opportunity to be a part of growing food, which is something that's been core to our country since the founding of our country. There's something very nice and fulfilling about being able to feed the community you're a part of. And so we're giving that opportunity to people who may not have grown up anywhere near anything related to farming. And so how does that happen? So you asked about technology. We, as you said, you know, this does not look like old McDonald's farm. I can attest to that. But it is still growing food with the same things that happen in essence outside, just in a little bit different. So we stack our crops to the floor to the ceiling. We grow under lights. They mimic the spectrum of the sun. And we grow in a totally controlled and contained environment. So that means we can grow 365 days of the year, independent of weather, independent of seasonality. It's reliable, consistent supply of quality produce year-round. No pesticides, no herbicides, no fungicides, no insecticides. It's pure and clean produce. And through our system, we're able to give all of our crops exactly what they need when they need it. So they're getting the water they need. They're getting the light they need. They're getting the nutrients they need. They're getting a healthy microbiome around the root system that they need. And that happens through a system we've developed called the Bowery Operating System. And the Bowery OS is a combination of software and hardware, AI, computer vision, and a sensor and control network. And that helps us not only monitor and maintain the conditions across our entire grow space, but actually monitors and maintains the entirety of our supply chain from before we ever plant a seed all the way until we harvest, package, and ship out our product. And that point is very important because sometimes people look at what we're doing at Bowery and they define it as farming. And of course we are farming. Farming is a part of what we do. We grow food, you can see it behind me. But in fact, what we're doing is we're developing technology that really allows us to reinvent the fresh produce supply chain. And we build a simpler supply chain. It's a shorter supply chain. It's a safer supply chain. It's a much more sustainable supply chain. And we have much more surety of supply. And we do that by essentially collapsing today's supply chain, which is thousands of miles long. It's weeks or months of time. And there's so many different players along the way, which create lots of loss and inefficiencies. And we collapse that down into a building. And we put that building close to where our consumers are and where our customers are. And we can deliver a product, as I said before, 24 to 48 hours after harvest.
So the traditional farmer, outdoor farmer, you know, doesn't have to deal with all those racks, the technology, all the expense that Bowery has. So, you know, you mentioned before that vertical farming is a small piece of agriculture, outdoor agriculture farming today.
Yep.
Isn't it going to be too expensive to build, you know, these kinds of vertical farms, not only throughout the U.S., and you point out that you're close to the marketplace, so you can deliver fresher, that real estate is more expensive than some of the real estate for farmland in the middle of the country.
Well, we won't even go into the conversation about cost of farmland because farmland is certainly not getting any cheaper. It's getting much more expensive. But we actually, building farms in the middle of an urban and metropolis is not an efficient endeavor. It's not what we do. Our farms are located kind of outside the urban centers, actually closer to our retail partners' distribution centers. That's the most efficient way to get our product there. But you're absolutely right. There's an expense to building our farms. It's not an extremely cheap endeavor. But comparing this against the farm isn't the right comparison. You have to compare what we've built to the entirety of the supply chain, which is not just the farm, it's all the equipment, then it's the processing that has to happen and the packaging that has to happen and the cold storage that has to happen and the distribution and the actual cold chain and all the shipping and transport that has to happen. And when you start adding all of that up, there's quite a bit of cost, there's quite a bit of time, and there's quite a bit of inefficiency that lives in all of those steps to go from growing a crop all the way to delivering a crop in today's traditional ecosystem. And where the efficiencies emerge is by collapsing all of that down into one place, eliminating the need in many cases for things like processing and washing, et cetera, which do a lot of damage to the crop. They destroy the shelf life, they destroy the quality of the crop, and being able to essentially grow and ship much more quickly, much more efficiently, and you eliminate a lot of those steps, a lot of the capital that goes into those steps, and a lot of the inefficiencies in those steps. So that's why I said before, it isn't a like for like in today's supply chain. It's actually a complete reinvention and reimagination. So is there a cost of capital? Yeah, absolutely. Capital has to go into this. But there's a lot of capital cost and CapEx that has to go into today's entirety of its supply chain. Building these distribution centers, the shipping and the trucking that has to happen, all the equipment on the farm. And the truth is, as we have more and more challenges around climate, the requirement and the capital needed to adapt to more sustainable farming is going to be extremely expensive. There is a lot of capital that's going to have to go into today's system just to try to manage against what is a very, very difficult, uncontrollable set of circumstances outside. And there's no guarantee it would work.
And you mentioned earlier that the Bowery produce items that are delivered to your 2,600 supermarkets are the same price or less than people might be paying now for conventionally grown.
For the organic produce, that's right. So you're competing with an organic product today, and that's important.
So look into your crystal ball, Irving.
Yep.
And where is Bowery and the produce industry in 5 years from now?
And you know, this ties to one other thing I didn't say about your last question. Innovation takes time to develop. You know, we could all, let's just take it's such an obvious example, but take what's happening with electric vehicles right now. It was not too long ago, you know, call it 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, where people were convinced that electric vehicles were never going to be possible. They were never going to be profitable. You were never going to be able to build them. You were never going to be able to scale them. You would never be able to make them even remotely affordable for anybody. And it was a fool's errand to even be thinking about an electric vehicle. And you fast forward to today, and it's hard to argue that EVs are transportation's future. And that's come from time and the innovation that happens around technology curves. And we have so much of that innovation that we get to benefit at Bowery as well. The obvious one that everybody talks about is the innovation and improvements in lighting and LEDs. We've seen that transpire, and it will continue to take place. But we have innovation in computing power and what you can do with artificial intelligence and what you can do with computer vision. And the way we use that at Bowery is it helps us to grow more efficiently. It helps us to grow more productively, more sustainably, and it helps us to operate more effectively and more efficiently as well. And all of our farms are connected through the operating system. So the more farms we build, the stronger our network gets, the more we learn, and the more improvement you see. And so there's so many tailwinds from a technological perspective that drives improvement, cost improvement, productivity improvement, quality improvement, breadth of product improvement. And so we've seen it with EVs. We've seen it with renewable energies. The world is filled today with ubiquitous technologies that at some point were impossible and never going to exist.
Right.
So what does the future look like? Can I tell you it's in 5 years? What I can tell you for certain is vertical farming is going to be a much more important aspect of not only the U.S. food system, but the global food system. It's going to represent a larger share of produce, not just in the categories we're in today, but it's going to represent a larger share across more categories as well. Because we've talked a lot about climate, but the other thing we haven't talked about is food security is national security. And right. In the world we're living in today, where there's lots of questions about globalization, there's lots of questions about regionalization, security of supply chains and regional supply chains, what we can provide at Bowery is that reliable, consistent supply of produce in any region, anywhere in the world, year round. And that has a lot of value too. And so you're going to see more focus, more attention, more energy around indoor farming and vertical farming. And you're going to see it take a bigger stage in the produce. Doesn't mean it's going to be the only answer. Farming and agriculture is a huge industry that requires many different solutions to help solve the problems in front of it. There will always be outdoor agriculture. We need outdoor agriculture. There's lots of other great innovations that we're seeing around inputs, you know, biological inputs, etc. They're going to all take place, be a part, rather, of the solutions that we're going to need in the coming decades as we think about food, agriculture, and climate. But there's no question vertical farming has a very important place on the mantle in the produce space as we move forward.
Irving, thanks so much for joining us today on Lost in the Supermarket. And we'll be looking for Bowery to be 20 times the size in just a few years.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.